And welcome to hour number two and the first hour for some of our affiliates. It's Rosie on the House, your Arizona Saturday morning tradition for 28 years. It is the second Saturday of the month, so we are talking trees with John Eisenhower of Integrity Tree Service. You join the conversation by calling 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you. We have a new text feature. You can text in your tree question at 411-923 as well. And as always, you've brought a tree of the month with you this morning, Mr. Eisenhower.
I always bring a tree in my back pocket. This week, we're looking at pine trees, but one in particular that I really like is the Afghan pine. It's the Elderica pine. It's also known as the Mondale pine, and it's a beautiful, durable, drought-tolerant tree native to Afghanistan. So, you know, when we get non-native trees brought into Arizona, you know, a good place to go to get a tree that would be adaptable to a climate like ours would be a place like Afghanistan, which, by the way, is about as far around the earth as you can get from Phoenix, Arizona. My parents spent a couple of years in the Peace Corps in Afghanistan back in the 70s. And when we were planning our trip to go there, we realized it was about as far as you could put a pin on the other side of a globe from Phoenix, Arizona. It really is about as far away as you can get. But
so you're saying all those stories about digging to China were false? We'd really dig to Afghanistan?
You dig to Afghanistan from Arizona. You got that. Yeah, but it's a really amazing place because elevation-wise and temperature and all, it's a desert climate. And those Afghan pines do so well here. They just love our alkaline, basically a more alkaline soil. They do well in drought conditions, and they're a beautiful tree.
And evergreen, so it'll be green all year.
Evergreen all year long. Grow to about 50 to 60 feet at maturity, about 30, 40 feet wide. And they're great for windbreak. I love pines. I've got several in my own yard. I have Aleppo pines at my house, which are different because they don't maintain that kind of Christmas tree shape throughout their whole life like Afghan pines do. If you want more of a pyramidal-shaped tree, an Afghan pine's your choice. If you want one that has more of a rounded tree form, you get an Aleppo pine because it loses its apical dominance. It allows the side branches to kind of compete for dominance in the canopy once it gets a little more mature. So if you want a more rounded tree form, you get the Aleppo pine.
The south side of our property, I want to put a row of pine trees. You visit, or you're driving around parts of Arizona, and you come across horse properties, and a lot of horse properties have these pine tree lines. I'm like,
sure.
Oh, that would just look great on ours.
And
I've been looking for Aleppo. But everywhere I go, they all are trying to push me to Afghan. No, you don't want Aleppo. You want Afghan. You want Afghan. You want
Afghan. Think, well, if you're looking for a windbreak, they are more uniform in size and shape. Because the Aleppos lose their apical dominance, they get a little bit wild and rangy. They're not quite as easy to predict the size and shape. But yeah, we have some neighbors behind us who have a line of six along the back of their property, and they're beautiful. They just are beautiful. A privacy screen, windbreak, and they're used quite extensively for windbreaks around the country.
What I know y'all aren't really in the nursery business, but any idea what a starter Afghan pine runs?
Oh, you're going to probably be paying $100 for a 24-inch box tree, you know, somewhere in that range.
My special guest is raising her hand
over here. This is Sarah Maitland. And
you've been with Integrity Tree for?
Since April.
Since April. And what brought you to Integrity Tree, or where did John steal you from?
Well, John and I have been colleagues for many, many years. And he asked me to come and join Integrity Tree to develop a plant health care division for the company.
And she was raising her hand regarding you have a comment on Afghan pines?
Oh, yeah. It's going to cost you more than $100 for a 24-inch box.
Oh, okay. All right. I guess I don't
know. You trim them.
You preface that remark by saying you don't know much about nurseries. You're right. I'm not a nurseryman. So what would a typical tree cost installed?
If they have a free planting at some of the local nurseries, it'll run anywhere from $200 to $500 installed.
So I was way off.
That's all right. We're allowed air here, but that's why we bring in special guests and great
hosts. That's right. I'm so happy to have Sarah join us last April. I was so happy to have her. She's got a great background in horticulture, and she's particularly her area of expertise is in spray technologies, how to, you know, in applying chemicals for disease and insect problems. And we have not had a plant healthcare division up until just now, just this last year. And so Sarah's come to help us set that up.
Well, then I'll ask this question. One of the reasons a lot of people are trying to push me towards the Afghan pine as opposed to Aleppo, as they said, well, they've got the Aleppo has this pine blight. You don't want to ever risk getting that. Is that a disease you're familiar with?
It is, and it isn't really much. Well, you wouldn't really call it a disease. It's really affected by winter rains, and that's what we find is the most common cause of it.
And what does it do to the tree?
It just gives a real aesthetically bad look of brown leaves to the foliage or needles.
And is that lack of winter rains or excess of winter
rains? It is. It's lack of winter rains. It's because the winter range or the normal rain patterns for that tree, it needs winter rains.
So this year, it's probably a pretty good year for
it is.
For those Aleppo pines.
Right. The Aleppo is, again, from Syria, Aleppo, Syria, and it also is in drought-tolerant climate, but they get Mediterranean winter rains, which are uncommon here. So if we don't have a wet fall and winter cycle exactly here in Arizona, it's probably best to try to supplement your water on all of your pine trees in the winter to try to simulate what they normally are used to in their native climate. So it'll help to ward off those blight symptoms.
And what will this rain do for our trees? I mean, I can't remember the last time we had 4 days where it rained 4 days in a row. I mean, it might have been overcast and rained on the first and third, but 4 consecutive days of rain in Arizona.
Well, it's really good. Not only is it irrigating the plants deeply and also giving them some of that winter rain, it's humidifying the air. It cleans our landscape. It's wonderful to see the landscape just sparkle after a nice rain. But there are some real chemical things that are happening, too. It's leaching a lot of salts out of the soil. It's leaching any toxins that are in the soil. It actually has an acidifying effect as well. Sarah was saying, what is the common pH of rain?
The pH of rainwater is about 5.5. And with that, it really starts to lower the pH and release some of those tied-up nutrients that aren't available at high pHs.
You know, our common pH here in Arizona is between 7.5 and 8. So when you get a 5.5 pH rain, it helps to buffer the pH. And a lot of times, because of our high pH, some of the nutrients that are in the soil are chemically unavailable because they're tied up due to that high pH. So that temporary buffering of the pH by rainfall releases some of those nutrients to become available to the plants.
How long can I turn off my irrigation system?
About another month.
that long.
Well, Rosie was saying earlier, you know, he wonders how deep that saturation was. And I bet it's every bit of 2 to 3 feet of saturation depth right now, which is about as deep as you need to water even your largest plants. You know, and in some places, I'm sure the saturation depth is even deeper than that. So that's great. It's good
we have an ongoing challenge with our listeners to all cut water consumption by 10%. And I think most people could do it if they would just react to weather patterns like this and turn their system off.
Yeah, turn them off. Yeah, somebody was saying to me yesterday that, you know, they looked out in the front yard and it was raining and their sprinklers were on the lawn and they quick ran out and set through it to the rain cycle. So yeah, we did the same thing a few days ago. Turn your timers off, and don't forget to turn them back on. I've done that too. You turn it off, and then I remember a month or two later that I forgot to turn the thing back on when I see my plants wilting in March. So yeah, be careful.
Don't do that. Well, we have a lot of other bullet points to cover, but we're here to take calls as well. 1-888-767-4348. As we take a call, that's a great opportunity to get on the line. We're going to start with John and Mesa on a pine tree. Good morning, John.
Good morning. I was wondering if I could talk to John Jay about my Aleppo pine. I've got some. I got three actually big ones, and one of them is getting a lot of little dead areas all over the place where the needles are turning brown. Is that blight you were talking about, or what is that?
Yeah, very likely it is. You know, the blight symptoms can be a flagging, we call it, where there's certain parts of the tree, certain branches that actually start to die back. We even see entire branches of pines die back, the rest of the tree being completely unaffected, and you'll see certain branches die back. We've also had a problem with some mites. which have gotten into the trees. And usually as temperatures start to drop, usually in October, we'll see some mites get into some of our trees. We've been kind of tracking that for several years since the first major outbreak about 10 years ago in the Phoenix area. Saw hundreds and thousands of trees across the Phoenix landscapes get infested with these mites, but they seem to be have kind of moved on, and we haven't had a recurring problem. We were afraid that they were going to be laying eggs, and then we'd have an annual outbreak in our trees subsequent to that, but we haven't. So that's something to be alerted to. But generally, trying to improve the cultural conditions around the trees, of course, fertilizing, and then that, as Sarah mentioned, trying to improve the watering in the fall and winter is really helpful. The symptoms you're seeing, though, are likely from problems that developed a year or so ago. So, you know, there's nothing you can do right now except to trim out some of that dead wood and then try to get on a better fall and winter irrigation cycle.
We appreciate the call, John, and good luck with that. Any other trimming while we're talking trimming? Is this a good time?
Yeah, this is really a great time to be doing all your stone fruits, all your pear trees, your elm, your ash, all of your trees that have dropped their leaves. This is ideal time to do the pruning. If
it needs it. It may not need it.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. But if you're going to be trimming those deciduous trees, this is a time. Mulberries, chinaberry, pistache, pecans. Lots of trees that have lost their leaves this time of year. A good time to get in there and do those.
We're talking trees with John Eisenhower of Integrity Tree Service, along with his tree health specialist. Is that the official title?
Plant health care director.
Plant yes. health care director, Sarah Maitland, at 1-888-767-4348 to join the conversation.
Call now to get your tree questions answered by ISA certified arborist John Eisenhower of Integrity Tree Service.
Paid, a fool about money, don't try to save. My heart says go, go, have a time. Saturday night, baby, and I feel it fine. I wanna rock it up. I wanna rip it up. I wanna shake it up.
John, can you do Elvis?
I love it. This is good.
Can you do Elvis? I know you play the guitar, do you?
Do I do the splits?
Hey, do you got all the moves?
No, I don't think I got the moves.
Can you throw your hand up in a circle like that? Come back.
I can give that a try. Yeah.
I see Eisenhower as more the George Strait, never move. Just the only thing moving is his fingers and his lips.
Yeah,
we were talking tree trimming. There's another one that we need to consider trimming. If you've got an old fruiting olive, now would be a good time.
Yeah, we do recommend if you're going to be trimming your olives every year, December, January is a great time because we do our olive spraying for fruit suppression in January, February. So if you want to get better spray coverage for that spraying to control your olives, December and January is a great time to do a little bit of thinning to make sure you can get good spray coverage.
Now, you can't in Maricopa County and some other counties of the state plant a fruiting olive anymore. And it's been like that
for a long time.
Long time. Instead of spending all that money, I never understood why people just didn't rip it out and put a different tree in there.
Well, they could, but some of these olive trees are beautiful. They're old and gnarly and just large, beautiful shade trees. And except for the olive drop and the nuisance that can be, they are just incredibly great trees. And people just are reluctant to take down these beautiful shade trees. And they're so durable. They're just, they can live to be several hundreds of years old. And they're just amazing trees. And anyone who has them just, you know, just enjoys them. They have that beautiful kind of old world look. And when planted in rows and in groves, they can just be an amazing contribution to your landscape.
Now, a quick text question before we get to our calls. Can you plant a tree over a septic system?
You can, you know, that's a loaded question in a way because septic systems can be of many different designs, and if it's an old system, you need to be kind of careful. There are some older ones. We fell through one. We drove a truck over and fell into one once. You know, I mean, there's old time ones that need to actually be replaced with different systems, but you can trees if you contrary to common ideas. Roots grow sideways, laterally. They don't grow down very deeply. So, you know, you can plant, you know, most 80% of a tree's roots are in the top 18 inches of soil. 50% of the roots are in the top 6 inches of soil. So, and they grow out a long ways. The majority of the mass of those roots is horizontal roots that are very close to the soil surface for available oxygen and water. So you don't have these large scaffold roots that are growing directly down. The root system of a tree is not a mirror image of the above ground portions of the tree, which is, you'll often see diagrams of these roots that are growing down just like the top of the tree is. But no, trees, roots normally grow out laterally. So in most cases, you could plant, except for a very large tree like a eucalyptus, over the top of a septic system pretty safely, because those are buried. How deep is a septic system normally? I mean, you're at least 3 or 4.
Well, how deep was the one you found?
Well, it was about 2 feet deep.
Yeah. You're about 2 to 3 feet.
Okay.
Just depending on the lot.
You know, if you are concerned about that, there's dozens and dozens of medium-sized trees that would be probably pretty suitable to plant.
Joan, Paul, Mark, and Ken are all on the line. Let's see what we can do to help them. We'll start with Ken and Vistancia. Good morning, sir.
Morning, how you doing?
Very good. How can we help?
Yeah, just a quick question. I have a new house that's just finished out in Vistancia, and my backyard is a blank slate, and I do have a two-story house next to me that kind of looks down into the backyard, and I was just wondering if you could suggest a couple of trees that might be good ones that might give me some privacy eventually, you know, that would get, you know, large and full, if you could suggest something like that.
Standing on your back door, how far is it to the back wall?
There's a decent, you know, probably 50 feet.
And is the second story house on the back, left or right?
Well, there's actually on the back and on the right. It's a cul-de-sac, so it's kind of a weird shaped lot, you know.
Okay.
Well, you know, what you're needing to do is put a tree in that's far enough away from your hardscape elements that you're not going to end up having the roots break up your block wall. But, of course, you want to try to, you'll be limited by some factors in regard to the size of your lot and the locations you want to plant the trees. But if you've got a pretty wide open palette back there, pretty wide open yard, a couple of trees that come to mind, the Afghan pine would be a good one, actually.
I was just thinking you said 50 feet
you're
tall,
looking for,
30 feet
you're
wide.
You're looking for a tree that's going to be taller than it is wide. You don't want to get a mesquite or a palo verde or an ironwood because they tend to grow as wide, if not wider, than they are tall, and they'll only be maxing out at 25 feet. You want something that's going to be probably 30 feet tall or taller. So pines would be a good choice. I'm thinking a shoestring acacia would be one I would...
That'd be very narrow.
Yeah, they definitely grow taller than they are wide. They're pretty narrow, so you could probably put a couple of those in. I have a customer who put 3 of those in side by side on about 6-foot centers, and they've all grown together and provide a great screen.
A couple events going on today for the gardener in you. For Tucson residents, starting at 9 o'clock today, Tony Sarah, your Tucson Horti guy, will be talking about rose pruning at 9 o'clock and tomorrow at 11 o'clock. And then Phoenix, you've got the annual rose pruning clinic at Harper's Nursery. Right now, we're in studio with John Eisenhower of Integrity Tree Service, talking trees with a load of calls as well as texts. But let's cover a couple more bullet points. I know you have you always bring a tree sermon with you, and full of bullet points. If we get down, like, I didn't hardly get half my sermon. So, well, that's how you know you have a good sermon, when we only get started on it after an hour. But there's some additional classes you have coming up.
We do. We've got a couple of classes. These are primarily for Scottsdale residents. In fact, they request that you are a Scottsdale resident to attend, because they're outdoor clinics offered at the corner of Donald Drive and Hayden at the Xeriscape Garden Pavilion on the southeast corner there on Saturday, March 5th and Friday, April 8th from 10 till 1. I'll be teaching those classes. We've been teaching them now for about 5 years. Very popular class, a lot of fun. If you are a Scottsdale resident and you'd like to attend, there's registration online with the City of Scottsdale, and look forward to seeing a bunch more people out there this year. We usually have about 60 or 70 people. I'm hoarse by the end of the time because we've got to talk loud to cover some of the traffic noise, but it's a lot of fun. Hope you can join us. That's Saturday, March 8th and Friday, Saturday, March 5th and Friday, April 8th. We also wanted to mention we have the Tree Climbing Championship coming up at the end of February. I know it's a ways off yet, but mark your calendars for February 27th. The Boyce Thompson Arboretum is hosting the championship this year, and we're looking forward to being out there with a bunch of our employees.
I can't wait. I've never been out there, and I've seen pictures, and I hear stories. I'm going to spend the whole day ahead of that Tree Climbing Championship, just getting a tour of the Arboretum.
It's so much fun. We moved the championship around the state. It's been in Prescott, and it was in Flagstaff last year, and Phoenix has hosted it many times. And this year, Boyce Thompson is going to host again. They hosted it several years back, and we had a lot of fun out there. It's a great place. Bring the whole family. Boyce is such a great location to walk the nature trails out there, see a lot of great trees, and also take in the Tree Climbing Championship on February 27th.
It's east of Mesa, west of Globe.
There you go.
Near Superior.
That's right. Out on, just take the I-60 out that way, and you'll eventually run right into it.
The very same day, we'll be doing the Dr. Sky tour on Canyon Lake.
Oh.
That night. So it could be a whole day event.
You could come back and take that in. That would be fun.
Let's start in San Manuel with Mark on Citrus.
Hi, Rosie.
Go ahead, sir.
Sure. Hey, I have a couple little fruit trees. I've called a show before about them, but right now my lemon tree, it's probably, I'd say, 4 feet tall, but it's got one row branch that's just growing up tall, and it's, like, going way above all the others, and it just looks weird. Can I trim that branch off, and where should I trim it off at?
Well, not seeing the tree, I would guess that would be a sucker coming up from the rootstock. Most citrus are grafted, and so the rootstock is a different tree than the fruit-producing portion of the canopy. And so usually it's a lemon, and they shoot way up high, and they usually got really big thorns.
One more time, Mark.
This one is actually coming off of the trunk of the tree itself. You know, off of the caliper of the tree or whatever, but it's like running around and up through and going way up and out of control.
How high up the trunk is it coming out?
I'd say probably a foot and a half, 2 feet.
It's likely from rootstock, and sometimes there's even an intermediate a section in the middle that holds the tree down too, so you have two different grafts. But it's likely a rootstock when it grows erratically like that, and I would remove that.
Any long-term damage if he leaves it there?
No.
It's just not going to do anything.
It'll take away energy of the tree, and it really kind of disrupts the formation of the canopy itself.
Yeah, it can outgrow the sweet fruit part of the tree and sometimes shade out some of the fruit-bearing branches. So you definitely need to get those out sooner the better.
And San Manuel, you're looking at south of Tucson. A lot of times, I hear a lot of people say, yeah, we grow citrus down here great. And a lot of people say, no, it gets way too cold. You're just wasting your time. Mm-hmm. For something like that, lemon, you said that's common on lemon. Do you see that on the rest? That's usually the most sensitive of the citrus, or your lemon or your lime.
Yeah, they're the most, you know, frost sensitive of the citrus. And yeah, you definitely need to cover those regularly to get some protection.
So that one big, large graft would make it a lot harder to cover. Just yank it out, and you're indefinitely better all around for covering it.
I would make a correct pruning cut on that. Yeah.
And where is that correct pruning cut on that particular wild limb?
Just at its point of attachment, wherever it comes off the main trunk, go down there and cut that off. And it's a sour orange rootstock normally, and it will bear fruit, but there'll be a sour kind of lemon-like fruit that some people, you know, mistake them if you have those on your orange trees. Sometimes people don't realize they have sour oranges and not sweet oranges. And you can trace those back. If you've got the sour oranges on those branches, you'll know, of course, that that's from the rootstock. So you can follow those wayward branches down to their point of attachment and cut them off.
There you go, Mark. Appreciate the call. Let's get to Paul in Sun City, who wants to talk about lemons. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning. My neighbor has a lemon tree. The lemons, they grow bigger than grapefruits, but when you cut them, they're dry inside.
Yeah, I'm not sure. There's a couple of things you might want. If you had any frost, of course, that's a concern. Sometimes people have fruit that's carry over from the previous year, which is long dried out, and then they pull it off and it's dried out. But you might want to think back, and if we had an early frost, or you're in a cold, especially cold area, sometimes within weeks, that fruit can be can crystallize and then thaw. And when you cut open the fruit, it's already been damaged by the frost, and so it looks dry inside because those cells inside the fruit segments themselves have already frozen and thawed again, and you've just got basically a damaged piece of fruit. That's likely what happened. You might have gotten too much frost, and now you've got what appears to be dry fruit. There is one other thing you might consider, that there might be a nutrient or a water problem somewhere along the line during the fruit development. But if you have full-size fruit that's dry, it's not likely that, you know, it was a cultural problem with water or fertilizer, because the fruit apparently sized, and now for it to dry up is not likely a water problem. I would think it would probably be frost.
There is a citrus clinic that's going to be held last weekend of January, I believe, that's sponsored by the U of A.
And it's held at Greenfield Citrus Nursery in Mesa.
And all the experts from the state are there and able to bring your piece of fruit and bring your branches and meet with them and get a lot of really good information.
Yeah, it's a really great clinic. A lot of industry professionals go there to get the latest in information. And they also have a ton of fruit set out on tables, all cut up and ready for you to taste and enjoy. If you're planning to plant citrus, this is a great place to go to get an idea of the wide variety of citrus available. And then you can purchase your trees right there at Greenfield Citrus Nursery, which is our go-to nursery when it comes to buying citrus.
Well, it sounds like something worth checking out, Paul. We'll make sure we get the link to that up at rosieonthehouse.com. Before we get to Joanne, a quick text question. Tom is in Florence, and he has two eucalyptus trees on his property, and he sees this similar tree all over the town, but he can't identify what specifically it is. It says the leaves are blue and pointed, rough bark on the lower part, smooth upper bark. What type of eucalyptus? And he says, Colbin, ?
Well, there's about 150 varieties there you go. I like the music. There you go. There's about 150 varieties of eucalyptus that grow in Australia.
150?
Only about 150.
Okay.
In Australia. But there's about 13 that are very commonly planted here in the Valley of the Sun. So among those 13, you might be looking at eucalyptus, the coolibah, which is a bluish gray leaf, a pointed leaf, usually about four to 6 inches in length. But you know, without seeing a picture of it, pretty hard to identify. You can go online. There's some great resources to look up the different features. You'll also want to look at the seed pods of eucalyptus, because some of the leaves are so similar, you have to actually look at the fruiting portions, the reproductive portions of the tree, to really get to zero in on the ID. And sometimes the little seed pods are one of the characteristics you need to look at to make a final determination.
150 eucalyptus varieties. I never would have guessed. Let's see how we can help Joanne in Glendale, who wants to talk about an evergreen. Go ahead, Joanne.
Thank you. Good morning. I have two evergreens, one on each side of my garage. The one I'm talking about 7 years old. It's one half of it faces the kind of like the inside where the pavement is, and the other side faces the outside of the house. The outside portion of this evergreen has turned completely brown, and the other half is completely green. Now, I haven't had any problem with this tree, but 2 years ago they put in cable lines between the houses. Would that have anything to do with this tree turning brown on just that one side?
I'm not sure. It depends how deep they and what kind of roots they might have cut. It's almost sounding to me a little bit like maybe an herbicide hit it.
Yeah, were these cables installed above ground or below ground?
They were below ground.
Okay, yeah, that's a likely, reason right there is if they had to trench close to the tree and there was damage to roots on that side of the tree, it very well could have affected that side of the tree that was dependent upon the roots that were cut. So I would...
It recover?
It just depends on what type of tree again. It was...
All I know is it's evergreen.
Yeah, it's really hard to tell if she wanted to take a picture of the tree, send it into our website, through our website contact page. We often can do some diagnostic work just from photographs alone, so that might be something to consider. Just go to www.itreeservice.com, itreeservice.com, and that will get you there.
Have a tree question and you're stumped? We're out in the yard with certified arborist John Eisenhower with Integrity Tree Service. Call with your questions right now at 1-888-ROSIE-4U.
So we did a little look around online in the Master Gardener Citrus Clinic, Saturday, January 23rd.
Yes, it starts at 9 and it goes until noon, and it's really a wonderful time. It's a beautiful farm, citrus farm. It's got peacocks running around, and all the experts from the state are there, and you transfer from different stations. You learn about fertilization, planting. You get to taste, I don't know, John, have you remember 50 different varieties of oranges, grapefruits, lemons?
It says here that what I'm looking at, 102 citrus varieties on display.
I knew it was a lot. But it's a wonderful day.
Yeah, it's really
great.
And
that's supported by the Master Gardeners.
$10 admission if you're interested. You can go to, and it actually sends you to MaricopaMasterGardener.com. That's coming up January 23rd. And John, you had said before Sarah joined you, you didn't have a plant care division.
Plant health care division.
Yeah. So what does a plant health care division bring?
Well, up till now, we have not been able to apply chemicals to treat some of the problems we've been diagnosing. We diagnose, insect and disease problems, but we haven't had a license with the Office of Pest Management here in the Phoenix area to be able to apply the chemicals to treat those problems that we're diagnosing. And so it was mainly my reluctance over the last 25 years in the industry to be handling the chemicals. I just have an aversion to dealing with chemicals. But over the last few years, knowing that the safety protocols are in place, that there are methods of dealing with pest applications and so forth that are safe, that are reliable, and I'm convinced that it's a service we've wanted to offer and bring to our customers and do it in a responsible way. And having known Sarah over the years, I'm just more excited than ever that we can now there's a principle in integrated pest management that talks about starting with the least toxic chemicals and applications, using beneficial organisms, using organic products, using natural products as a starting place, and then only reserving silver bullet treatments that are higher chemical compounds, more potent compounds, only in rare instances when you absolutely need them, and understanding that we can apply these IPM principles to the plant health care division or the services that we want to offer convinced me that it's something we wanted to try to do. And Sarah's come in and with her vast experience and her educational background, we're in really good hands to be able to do it well.
And what is your vast experience, Sarah? What got you started in tree chemicals?
Well, not so much tree chemicals. I'm a certified arborist also, and I'm also a registered consulting arborist. And so trees have just always been my love. My degree is in horticulture, and I've done a lot of that over the years, but I really was fortunate that when John called and asked me to join his team, because I love trees. And there's a lot of things that affect trees that we can help them with. You know, we have adverse insects coming into the valley. Last year, we got hit with a ficus whitefly. This year, we're going to have a preventative program to protect those trees. So we have, you know, all kinds of insects coming in from all over the world. And we just don't know what to expect yet, but we're ready for it. You know, emerald ash borer could come and hit our ash here. So there's a lot of things that we have to look for.
And you had mentioned earlier trimming olive trees in preparation for spraying to prevent the fruit from producing. Mm-hmm. So in the past, y'all would just trim it, and then so they'd have to call someone else to spray. You can Correct. Trim and spray now. Now, yes. Do you do that in the same day?
We can. Often it'll be scheduled on a different day because we're trying to do all of our olives on the same day. But yeah, we have technicians that are trained who can go out and do that fruit suppression spraying. In fact, we have this can often be a very busy time of year for Sarah. She's got her hands full scheduling some of our customers right now. But we're excited. We have never been able to do this. We've had to outsource that work, and now we're able to do it in-house and bring more of a full service to our customers.
And you're mentioning a secondary benefit for a different type of tree that this fruit preventative spray may help.
You mean otherwise than other than olives?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, yeah, we use plant growth regulators to control olive production or olive fruiting. They're really chemical compounds that are supposed to stimulate or diminish the natural growth regulators in the tree. And so that's what we use different kinds of products for different uses. But we can stop oak trees from having acorns. We can suppress them. And also mesquite trees. You know, there's a lot of different applications for growth regulators.
A lot of people, customers of ours, have mesquite trees that just drop pods all the time. And this is another place where we can use plant growth regulators to suppress some of that and keep some of that under control.
Well, if you're on hold, hang tight. We'll get your question answered as we go into the top of the hour news break. John will answer your questions off the air. If you weren't able to get in, weren't able at a phone or had the opportunity, you could go to itreeservice.com.
Yes, sir. itreeservice.com or 602-788-0005.
And on y'all's website, we've got the January tree calendar. Actually, well, you've got the tree calendar for the entire year. But in January, it looks like we got just about all of that covered. Any final words?
Well, just give us a call and ask to speak with Sarah, and she can get you scheduled for your olives and your oak trees and your mesquites.